From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Jennifer Mitchell, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, December 28, 2018. And on this day in Maine, Governor-elect Janet Mills selects the Maine State Prison Warden and a former Portland Police Chief to head the Corrections and Public Safety Departments. Governor Paul LePage grudgingly signs off on the second congressional district results. And Maine bluegrass pioneer Al Hawks has died at the age of 88. Those stories and more coming up.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by Coastal Maine Botanical Gardens, presenting Gardens Aglow, where visitors will see the gardens in a whole new light, now through December 31st. MaineGardens.org.
Governor-elect Janet Mills has chosen a former Portland police chief to head the Maine Department of Public Safety. If confirmed, Michael Soschuk would oversee consolidated emergency communications, the Maine Criminal Justice Academy, drug enforcement, emergency medical services, the fire marshal's office, gambling control, highway safety, and the Maine State Police. Soschuk served as Portland police chief for 6 years and currently works as the assistant city manager. Mills says he's well respected for his experience and reputation.
He provides a progressive approach to law enforcement, which includes community policing, which includes progressive approaches to the opiate epidemic that we are determined to tackle on day one. And it includes progressive approaches to the issues of mental health, homelessness, and police responses to mental health crises.
Soschuk is one of the founding members of Portland's Addiction Collaborative, which has worked with partner agencies and organizations to develop a comprehensive strategy to address the opioid epidemic. Mills has also nominated Maine State Prison Warden Randall Liberty as Commissioner of the Department of Corrections. Both nominations must be confirmed by the Maine legislature. In one of his final acts in office, Republican Governor Paul LePage has grudgingly certified the results of the second congressional district race won by Democrat Jared Golden. Steve Missler reports.
The governor tweeted Friday that he signed off on the election, which Golden won after prevailing in the nation's first congressional race decided by ranked choice voting. LePage has long been a critic of ranked choice, and his tweet included a photo of the election certificate with the words "stolen election" scrawled next to his signature. The same certificate will be sent to the clerk of the U.S. House of Representatives. Republican Congressman Bruce Poliquin also formally ended his legal battle over ranked choice voting in the election he lost to Golden. Golden will be sworn in with a new Congress on January 3rd. LePage's last day in office is January 2nd. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
Well, this month, the U.S. Department of Agriculture announced that it's rolling back school nutrition standards enacted under the Obama administration. USDA Secretary Sonny Perdue says the change is needed because too many schools are struggling to serve meals that meet the higher nutrition standards but are also appetizing. Cape Elizabeth High School recently dropped out of the federal lunch program for that very reason. But at another district in southern Maine, school lunch sales have soared since it began dishing out healthier meals. Patty White has more.
When the bell rings and it's time for lunch at Windham High School, students head to what most of us would refer to as the cafeteria. But RSU 14 School Nutrition Director Jeannie Riley has a different name for it.
Well, we like to consider ourselves the busiest restaurant in town because we're serving so many meals.
3,000 meals a day for the entire district, which includes the town of Raymond. And on this day, a choice of street tacos is on the menu, fish or carnitas. The pork is roasted and shredded in-house. Colorful veggie sides are also prepared from scratch.
And black bean salad and or slaw.
It wasn't too long ago that meals here came out of the freezer or a can. Kids could grab a slice of pizza and a milk and call it lunch. But new federal nutrition standards, which began to take effect in 2012, require that students now also take at least one fruit or vegetable. And here at Windham High, some students pile produce onto their lunch tray.
Can I talk about this? Because I really like the school lunch, actually.
After taking both the slaw and bean salad with his tacos, senior Gabriel Ransom helps himself to carrots from a fresh fruit and veggie bar.
That bar, you can put as much as you want on the plate and it still costs the same, which is amazing. They really encourage you to grab a lot of things, and you can grab, like, such a good meal for really, really cheap. And I haven't gotten home lunch since I went to the high school, actually.
Ransom isn't alone in his enthusiasm. Over the past decade or so, school lunch participation at Windham High, which has about 1,000 students, has grown from 80 lunches a day to nearly 500. The transition to more healthy, home-cooked meals was a lot of work. But Windham Raymond schools have a secret weapon, Samantha Cowens-Gasparo.
I'm the chef and nutrition coordinator for RSU 14.
Otherwise known as Chef Sam, who was hired to help RSU 14 meet new nutrition guidelines. She regularly visits classrooms to introduce students to new foods and has been known to get a standing ovation when she enters a room.
We very quickly learned that kid-centric and making kids a part of the change, not something that's happening to them, became the model to go with in order to implement these changes as fast as we have.
She explains to students why bread and pasta have been switched to whole grain and why they're required to take a serving of a fresh fruit or vegetable. She lets students taste recipes in development to get feedback. Chef Sam also asks kitchen staff, who typically don't have culinary backgrounds, whether certain meals are realistic to pull off.
Because someone who's not trained in culinary skills and then put on the spot and told, you need to make this food good for 300 people by 10:45, now go, is like, that's a lot. That's a lot on their shoulders when they don't know exactly how to do it or what the end product is supposed to be like.
Chef Sam has since trained kitchen staff in knife skills and batch cooking so that food served at 12:30 is just as fresh as the food served at 10:45. The school district applied for grants to purchase equipment, such as food processors and additional refrigerators, to help prep and store fresh food. Nutrition Director Jeannie Riley says she also started a marketing campaign on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
We market on pretty much any level that's free.
The marketing on social media, says Riley, is aimed at busting the traditional reputation of school lunch, even after the switch to healthier homemade meals like tandoori chicken and Asian rice bowls.
It lends credibility. If we say we're making chicken tenders from scratch, I show a picture of our staff actually breading chicken tenders so that people will believe us.
And the culture around cafeteria food is changing, Riley says. Parents now send emails to request recipes. That kind of success is why RSU 14 doesn't plan to revert to the lower nutrition standards recently announced by the USDA, which allows schools to serve more refined grains, sodium, and flavored low-fat milk. Chef Sam says with millions of meals served every day, school lunch is an opportunity to change the way a culture eats.
32 million meals. If we're exposing them to fresh fruits, vegetables, giving them try it samples of quinoa so they can see what it is, they can smell it, they can taste it, they can experience it, then we are changing the way these kids eat for the rest of their lives.
There is one change afoot in the nutrition department at RSU 14. Chef Sam is leaving to raise her young family. But one of the district's kitchen managers, Ryan Roderick, will be stepping into the chef's role where he vows to continue to create a culture of healthy eating, which is exactly what Tasha Pongratz, a seventh grader at Jordan Small Middle School in Raymond, says she wants.
If you go to a school that just has like junk food and stuff, it's not a good school. Like, you know that they don't really care about you. This school, like, really makes you feel like, okay, like they care about what you eat and they make sure that you're going to stay healthy.
One meal at a time. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
Well, the award-winning bluegrass artist and Westbrook resident Al Hawks has died. He was 88 years old. And as Willis Ryder Arnold reports, Hawks is being remembered as a musician with a style all his own.
Here we go away with the crazy fingers rag.
Al Hawks is nothing short of legendary in certain music circles.
He was an icon. He was a pioneer at a time when there wasn't much bluegrass here. And so he was the go-to guy.
Joe Kennedy was Hawks' friend and had worked with him to form the Bluegrass Music Association of Maine more than two decades ago. But by that time, Hawks had already established himself. Al Hawks was born in Rhode Island, and his family relocated to Maine when he was 10 years old. He picked up a love of Appalachian folk music through the radio. He began playing the style of music as a youth, and even went on to found his own country music pirate radio station. It was a short-lived experiment, after he got word that the FCC was trying to locate the source of the original signal. As he told interviewers for the documentary, The Eventful Life of Al Hawks.
And we did that for almost a year, maybe a little more than a year. And then we finally shut it down. And my father came over and said, where's the power cord? And I showed it to him over there on the wall. And he went over and pulled it out of the wall. He said, we're not going to prison. The station's going off the air.
But Hawks couldn't shake that bluegrass bug. He continued to play, building a reputation as a performer. In the 1950s, he teamed up with Alton Myers, a black musician, to form what's been called the first popularly known interracial bluegrass duo, Allerton and Alton.
All right, friends and neighbors, Alton and Alton, the Cumberland Ridge Runners, here again for 15 minutes of fine old time singing and playing.
Even in that era of segregation, says Joe Kennedy, the duo got played on the radio.
They got hundreds and hundreds of letters, and people would ask for a picture, and they were very surprised to see that there was a black man that they were enjoying on the radio.
In the late 50s, Hawks co-founded Event Records and a studio which he ran in Westbrook. He recorded music by noted Maine musicians Dick Curless, Lenny Breaux, and others. Musicologist Cliff Murphy, who wrote a book about country and Western music in New England, says those early albums were integral to preserving the music of the region.
Without Al Hawks, I think some of the finest music that's ever been recorded in New England by New Englanders would never have been recorded.
Hawks himself agreed.
We had some outstanding recordings. We just were in, it was in Westbrook, Maine, and that's a hard place to be doing business in the entertainment field.
More recently, Hawks could be seen performing at Lenny's Pub in Westbrook and at festivals in his signature red cowboy hat, though he had to give up playing mandolin and guitar after developing Parkinson's disease. Bill Umble, the owner of Lenny's, remembers Hawks as a true force.
You know, the man just had a huge, you know, he had a huge love of life, a zest for life, and he loved what he was doing. You know, he, like most country musicians or musicians like him, they believed in what they were doing, and they went after it. Hard.
Hawks' most recent recorded songs focused on his home state. He released the album, I Love the State of Maine, in 2015.
He was not just an old man to me.
Al Hawks died early Friday, according to family members. He had just turned 88 years old on Christmas Day. His wife, Barbara, died on December 3rd. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Willis Ryder Arnold.
He was not just an old man to me. Times were bad. We didn't have.
And that's the news on this day in Maine, December 28th, 2018. Thanks to Susan Sharon, Keith Shortall, and our digital team. I'm Jennifer Mitchell.